We're going to start by the two dots on the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Bet. Here the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah that if one person says the third of the month and one person says the fifth of the month, there we think that the Eidut is Mukheshet, that is a contradictory Eidut. On the other hand, if they're only off by a day, we don't consider that to be Eidut Mukheshet because the problem of Ibur HaChodesh, that one of the parties heard about Ibur HaChodesh and the other one did not hear about Ibur HaChodesh. Gemara says, Ad Kama. How long do we assume that people make such a mistake? Amar Rav Acha Bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ad Rubo Shel Chodesh. Till the majority of the month has gone by, we assume that people are still uncertain as to whether the previous month was 29 days or 30 days. But once we reach past the Rove of the Chodesh, meaning that you're already in the second half of the Chodesh, but then we expect everybody to have that knowledge or information about the fact that it was a leap month or non-leap month in the previous month. Amarov Avanam Nami Tanina. That is similar to what we see in our Mishnah. Echadomer Bishlosha, Echadomer Behei. One of them says it was on the third of the month, and one of them says it was on the fifth of the month. Edutan Beteila. That's considered to be contradictory testimony. Vamai. Name says Ze Yodea Bishnei Iburim. Ze Einu Yodea Bishnei Iburim. All you have to say is that the continuation of the problem can be cumulative, which is that if a person didn't know that one month was 30 days, and then the following month, they also don't know that information, that's 30 days. So cumulatively, you're going to end up with a gap of 2 days. So why not say then that these individuals are not contradicting each other, but rather one of them knows about the Ibur HaChodesh, meaning the last 2 months were Ibur HaChodesh, and the other one does not know about the Ibur HaChodesh. Elalah mishum deruba yada, or isn't it because once the move of the month has passed, everybody's aware of it, and therefore we don't say cumulatively that the person could be unaware of the month being 30 days twice, or 29 days twice. Lolam emelecha beruba nami lo yada. No, Gemara says maybe not. Even if you reach through the move of the month, maybe people don't know about it. Upishipura yada. But people do know about the blowing of the shofar. Blowing of the shofar was the siman that Beit Din did in order to indicate to people when Rosh Chodesh was. They blow it either on the 30th or the 31st day to indicate which of those two was Rosh Chodesh, whether it was a 29-day month or a 30-day month. And Gemara says, B'chad Shipura Amar Detoy. People make a mistake or people don't hear one blowing of the shofar. Dre Shipura Lo Amar Detoy. People don't miss two blowings of the shofar. So it could be that they missed it. It could be they didn't hear it. It could be whatever reasons that they missed one time that they didn't hear the shofar, they didn't know when Rosh Chodesh was. But to say that a person twice in a row didn't hear when Rosh Chodesh was, that would be a little surprising or unusual, and therefore we don't speak about a cumulative effect of missing out on when it is a Chodesh Malei or Chodesh Chaser. But that doesn't necessarily support what we said before, that by the Rove of the Chodesh, we assume the person knows the information, even though we do Paskin that way, that once you cross over the Rove of the Chodesh, we do assume the person has that information. Nevertheless, it's not a proof from our Mishnah to that fact. And this now parlays us into Kiddush HaLevana, and this is the main sugya in Shas about Kiddush HaLevana, which we just did last night, Motzei Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Elul. And based on that, the Gemara now is going to parlay into dealing with the halachot of Kiddush HaLevana. V'amar Rav Acha Bar Chanina, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ad Kama Mevarchim Al HaChodesh. Until which point does one make the bracha on the chodesh min pirkat levana? Ad shitit malei pgimata. Until the pgam, the break, or the missing part of it has been filled in. Pikamo. How much does that mean? What does it mean that the missing part is filled in? Amar Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ad shiv'a. That means until the 7th of the month. Nardai amrei ad shisha asar. And Nardai say it's until the 16th of the month. They both believe, like Rabbi Yochanan, that it means Achit Melei Pigimata. The only question is, what does that mean? Is it when they mean that you filled in the Pigima, is it like a bow and arrow, where you have the bow, which is a half circle? So that would be at the 7th day, where the Pigimata Levana is then filled in to be a full half circle. Or Kinafio, or to me like a sieve, meaning like a full circle. So that's the question here. When is it mitmaleip gimata? Is it when you've filled in a quarter of the month, meaning that half of the moon is now full? Or does it mean half the month when the moon is completely full? That's the question. So amale ravacha midifti l'ravino. So ravacha midifti says to ravino, levarech hatov v'ameitiv. According to Rashi says the question here is on Rav Yehuda's position that says that the milei mikinata levana is already when you get each 7 days into the month. He says that why don't you then make a bracha of a tov v'meitiv. Even though you can't do Kiddush Levana past the 7th of the month, at least you should be able to make the bracha of a tov v'meitiv because the moon continues to grow. Since when do you need to make a bracha of tov v'meitiv? Because of the improvement of the moon, a continuous increase in the light of the moon, we don't make the bracha of Dayan Emet when the moon is diminishing its light. That we should be then devarach a tov v'meitiv. So in order to make the bracha of a tov v'meitiv when its light is increasing, Umar says, Vila varchinu letarvayu. Okay, that's a fair question. That's a fair point that we don't say a tov v'meitiv, we don't say Dayan Emet, therefore we shouldn't say a tov v'meitiv. But let's look at the underlying premise that you don't say Dayan Emet. Why don't we make the bracha of a tov v'meitiv and Dayan Emet? Kevin dainu urchei lo mevarchinan. Since this is its natural progression, we don't make a bracha on it. Meaning the brachot of a tov v'meitiv and Dayan Emet are things that happen which aren't necessarily in the normal progression or something that's a recurring event that happens over and over again. It's for unusual events or circumstances which are more episodic. That's when we make brachas of Dayan Emet like death and Tov HaMeitiv like birth. Certain items like that where you have episodic events, yes, they're part of Urchei Demilta, they are a natural part of the world, but they're not something that's automatic, but not something that always happens, and therefore we make the bracha. On the other hand, to speak about something that happens month after month after month, there wouldn't be appropriate to make the brachot of a tov v'meitiv or Dayan Hemet. So now, Amar Rabbi Acha, Bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. As you can see here, all these memrot are from this grouping of Amoraim, all from Rabbi Yochanan. That's what led us from the Ad Rov HaChodesh by what the point at which people know or knowledge of the fact that there was a Malay or Chaser previously. They also gave us the memra about until how far into the month do you say Birkat Kiddush Levana. And now we have an additional memra from them which is central to the idea of Kiddush Levana. Kol mevarech al haChodesh bizmano. Anyone who makes the bracha on the Chodesh, Kiddush Levana, in its time, kilu mekabel pnei hashchina. It's as if he is greeting the presence of God. Tivacha haChodesh hazeh. It says by Kiddush haChodesh, haChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodeshim. Tivatam zekeli van veyu. It says there in Az Yashir, zekeli van veyu. Chazal in general see the word zeh, whenever it's used, to mean that somebody can literally point to it, or somebody has the ability to see something. So there Chazal say about zekeli van veyu, that the people on the Yam, when they were singing Shirat HaYam, were able to see the presence of the Shekhinah, point to the presence of the Shekhinah. And they say, from that zeh, they correlate it with the Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, that just like by Kriyat Yam Suf, people were able to see the presence of the Shekhinah, so too by Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, with the renewal of the moon, one is able to greet the presence of the Shekhinah or be a part of the presence of the Shekhinah. So here, the Mefarshim deal with why or what's the association with Mekabel Pnei HaShekhinah. Either it's because, similar to the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, whereby when Moshe raises his hands up to the sky and the people look up at Moshe's hands that they win the battle with Amalek, then the Mishnah says, V'chi yadav shel Moshe notzchot milchama, do the hands of Moshe make the battle go? Ella, that when people look up at the hands of Moshe, they're looking towards Shemayim, and they are mikavnin libam, then they have kavano, or they're mishavdim libam l'shamayim. And similarly over here, when one looks up towards the moon, and does the Kiddush HaLevana and sees the new moon, that reminds the person the Kavin Libam LaShamayim, to look up to the heavens and to guide their hearts towards the heavens, and that's why it's considered to be a Mekabalat Pnei HaShekhinah. Or you say that the renewal of the moon is similar to the creation, in which the creation takes place from something that is nothing, where the moon is gone, and then it slowly increases, and similarly over here, like the moon's renewal. Similarly, that is reminds us of Kriyat Briyat Olam, and that's what it meant by Mikavlat Pnei HaShekhinah. Or it's because of the bracha that we say with Kiddush Levana, which we're going to see in a second, the wording for that bracha involves a tefillah or a beseeching of Hashem, that Hashem should bring about the renewal of Pnei Yisrael and Zman HaMashiach, in which there will be Kabbalat Pnei HaShekhinah. Or last possibility is that the Levana is representative of the Shekhinah, and therefore the renewal of the Levana is like a renewal of the Shekhinah, or the fact that we are looking up towards the moon representing a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's considered to be Mekabel Pnei HaShekhinah. So for all of those reasons, we have this correlation between Kabbalat Pnei HaShekhinah and Kiddush Levana. And Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel, Il Malei Zachu Yisrael. And the way that we have it in our Girsaot, when we say it in Kiddush Levana, is Ilu Lo Zachu Yisrael. That has to do with, as you can see here, there's a reference to the Tosfot in Megillah that differentiates between the word Il Malei with an Aleph afterwards versus Il Malei with a Hey after it, as to whether the word Lo is incorporated in the word. So if you have Il Malei with an Aleph after, it means that the word Lo already is incorporated in the word, and therefore you wouldn't say the word Lo afterwards. Whereas if you had said Ilu Lo, and that's the way that we have our Girsa, that would be fine, because then the word Lo is not incorporated in the word, which is, had it not been that Bnei Yisrael Zachu Yisrael Alakpil Bnei Aviyam B'Shem Shemayim B'Kol Chodesh B'Chodesh Dayam, if that was the only mitzvah they had, if that was the only thing that they participated in, that would be enough, like Dayenu. Meaning the fact that we have this opportunity to be Kabu Pnei Shechinah, that is a significant event. Amrabai, Hilkach Nimrunu Me'umad. For that reason, we say Kiddush Levana standing, because it's considered to be Kabbalat Pnei Shechinah. It would only be appropriate that if you're going to greet the Shechinah, that one be standing for the greeting of the Shechinah. Mreimar Marzutra Mekatfei Umevarche. They used to, now the word Mekatfei is used in the Gemara many times for being held up on other people's shoulders. So it's either a possibility that they were being held up by their students or by their shamashim, that they raised them up on their shoulders in order to take them out to do the bracha of Kiddush Levana, which was, again, a form of respect or being taken out so that they could do this. The other possibility is Mekatfei is that others helped them, meaning that they gave them support to stand up because they were older, but they felt it important to stand up in order to do Kiddush Levana. Or the other possibility, which you can see in the Girsa that is taken out, which is Mekatfei Hadodi, that they used to put their arms around each other, or they used to hold each other up and make the bracha, but again, it's a form of kavod for the Kabbalat Pnei Shechina. Amle Ravacha de Ravashi, b'ma'arova, in Eretz Yisrael, mevarche baruch mechadesh chodoshim. The bracha that they make for Kiddush Levana is considered to be baruch mechadesh chodoshim. You look in the Yerushalmi, that's what the Yerushalmi brings down in the Mekorot that I could send to you, that the Yerushalmi says that that's the bracha of Kiddush Levana. Amalei, he responds to him and says, "Hai nishay didan nami mevarche." That our women even make the bracha. Now this line in the Gemara turns out to be a little bit controversial because it has major impact on the lochot of Kiddush Levana. The simplest reading of the Gemara is that even our women can make that bracha, which is even our women who are not literate or women who are not so knowledgeable, that type of short bracha they could make. And so therefore that can't be the bracha. Elikid Rav Yehuda. Must be the bracha like Rav Yehuda. Amar Rav Yehuda. This is the nusach ha-brocha for Kiddush Levana. Baruch Asher bim ba'amaro barash chakim. He is the one, Akadosh Baruch Hu, with his word that he created the heavens. Ubruach piv kol tzva'am. And with the breath of his mouth, he created all of the constellations. Chok uzman natan lehem. He gave them a timing and a regular pattern by which they conduct themselves. Shelo yishanu et tafkidam. And so they commanded them not to deviate from their normal paths or from their normal cycles, their natural consistency that they should not deviate from him. Sasim usmechim lasod ritzon kunam. And these constellations rejoice at doing the word of God or following the word of God, and therefore cycling like they're supposed to cycle. As Rashi notes over here, Yasiski Gibor, that in Tehillim Yutet, there's a connection between the constellations and the rejoicing, which is the Shamay Misraprim Kvod Kel, Umasei Adav Magida Rakia, and in describing the sun or the constellation, says, V'huka Chatan Yotzei Michupato, Yasiski Gibor Larutz Orach. So here they are carrying out the word of Hashem, and they are rejoicing in the carrying out of the word of Hashem. Or there are others who want to explain that the rejoicing or sasim esmechim lasod ritzon kanam is even when Hashem asks them to deviate from their normal pattern in order to help Bnei Yisrael out, they are sasim esmechim. They're happy to carry out those orders. Poalei emet. So over here there is a question about the girsa. The girsa that we have in our Gemara is poalei emet, which would reference back to the constellations, that it's a repetition almost of what we said before, that they are trustworthy or consistent in their doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's one girsa they have. The other girsa that is found is Po'el Emet. That's a reference to Akadosh Baruch Hu, not the constellations, that God was right and justified in his being Meme'et Levana, in reducing the size of the moon. Shepulatan Emet, because their actions or their behaviors are right and just. V'alilivana amar shetit chadesh. And God said to the moon that it should renew itself. Ateret, a crown, utiferet, and glory. Lamuse boten, to those that are within the womb. Shehein atidin litchadesh kimota, that they in the future will be renewed just like it. Ulefayer liotram ashem kvod malchuto, and then they will give glory to their creator over the honor of his kingdom. And this is a reference, as Rashi notes, to the Atid Lavo. It's a siman that a Kodesh Baruch Hu will bring about the renewal of Bnei Yisrael, or the redemption of Bnei Yisrael. And that's what we're referencing to here, that the fact that the moon renews itself, so too part of the natural cycle of the world is that Bnei Yisrael will also renew themselves and will also reach a point of Ge'ula. And that's what we are saying here. The reference to Emusei Boten is, some explain here, that it means those that are burdened with mitzvot, amus, that are burdened with mitzvot, and not just a fetus. And so it's also in that way a reference to Klal Yisrael. And then you end with the bracha that they said in Eretz Yisrael, which is Baruch Atah Hashem, Mechadesh Chodoshim, the one who renews the months. Now the pasuk that they quote, and then we'll come back and discuss more about Kiddush Levana, which is Ki B'tach Pelot Taselecha Milchama, that with cunningness and tricks you will go to battle. Again, here we have a Agadic Memra from the same Amoraim, Amrav Acha Baruch Hanina, Amrav Asi, Amrav Yochanan. B'mi ata motzel milchamta shel Torah? With whom do you find the battle of Torah? B'mi sheish bo chavilot shel Mishnah? One who has piles and piles of Mishnah under his belt. And that's what the word tachbulot is, chavilot, they're interpreting it. Kari Rav Yosef anafshei, Rav Yosef, in reference to this, said about himself, Rov tvuot bekoach shor, the multitudes of the produce that comes from the strength of the shore. So the koach shor is a reference to Yosef, because it says bechor shor hadar lo. And so Rav Yosef, bechor shor, he said was a play on him, Yosef. Rov tvuot is the fact that Torah is nimshalah l'tvua, that Torah is compared to the tvua, and that is that the Gemara, at the end of Brachot, the end of Horiot, says that one who has a large amount of knowledge in Torah, a vast collection of Mishnayot, is called a Mare Chitaya, the one who has the silo full of wheat, someone who really controls the Torah because of its breadth of knowledge. And so here he says, Rov Tvuot, the one with much tvua, the one with much grain, meaning many Mishnayot, Bekoach Shor, reference to Yosef. And that is what actually the Gemara says about Rav Yosef, both in the end of Brachot, the end of Horiot, that they called him Sinai. It's called Sinai because he was one who had vast knowledge of the Torah, in that the breadth of knowledge that he had was tremendous, and he was called a Sinai, as opposed to there in the Gemara Brachot, they quote about Rabba was an Oker Harim, someone who was better at being mifalpel, asking questions and in-depth analysis of that which is there. The Gemara then asks, which one is better, Sinai Adif or Oker Harim Adif? And the Gemara answer is Sinai Adif, the one with the breadth of knowledge is greater, because Akol Tzrichin Lamarei Chitaya, because everybody needs the silo, everybody needs the food with which to work. And that's what Rashi in some senses says over here. Horiotel Amod Al Boriah V'Alikara, the one who wants to get to the true understanding of Torah and to get to the depth of understanding and truth is the one who has this breadth of knowledge. Lo ke'adam amifalpel umichudad ubal svara. It's not somebody who is sharp and can do all these pilpulim and understandings. V'lo lamad mishnayot ubraitot. He doesn't have the breadth of knowledge. V'kiheichan yitgalei asod. Because then how will he get reference to ideas or possibilities that are there? I mean, one can speculate about possibilities or can try to come up with understandings of the Gemara, but that is only in the context of the knowledge base which would give you the reference or the possibility of introducing such an idea. If he needs a concept or an idea from here, he can pull it from another Mishnah, or he can bring evidence to it from another Mishnah. Or if he has a stira or contradiction, he can learn from the other Mishnayot how to reconcile that. So the Mishnayot themselves are a source of ideas, or maybe even a confirmation of an idea, and not some abstract type of learning in which we are thinking about the possibilities without any basis in reality to those reasons. And that's why the person with the larger bed of knowledge can then use that to answer questions and get to the depth of understanding, rather than someone who simply has the sharpness to get to the depth of understanding but does not have the knowledge base with which to use in order to gain that understanding. All right, now just to backtrack a little bit and deal with the issue of Kiddush Levana. The Kiddush Levana over here, the Mefarshim deal with in terms of the timing of Kiddush Levana, which is very important. The Sfaradim are noeg based on the Shulchan Aruch not to say Kiddush Levana until the seventh day of the month. They would wait until full 7 days have elapsed. And then only then do they say Kiddush Levana until the midpoint in the month. We paskin the Naradai, as you can see over here, until the 16th of the month. The 16th of the month does not mean that literally the 16th, but it means ad velo ad bichlal. It means the 16th, not including the 16th, which means through the 15th of the month. And many of the Rishonim note that it doesn't literally mean the 15th of the month. It means halfway through a lunar month. And not exactly 15 days, 29 and a half days and 793 chalakim, and you would divide that in half, and that would give you the point at which Kiddush Levana is no longer relevant, because then you've reached the full moon. The Rishonim also note that the counting of the Kiddush Levana does not begin from Rosh Chodesh, but rather from the actual Molad. Like today, where our Molad is off by a day or a day and a half, where we make Rosh Chodesh, not exactly when the Molad turns out. Nevertheless, you would count the Kiddush Levana from the time of the Molad and not from the time of the Rosh Chodesh. And interestingly enough, it's brought in the Tshuvat HaMa'aril, and this is quoted by the Beit Yosef as well, that even though we have a calculation of the Molad HaLevana, and sometimes it will turn out that the Molad HaLevana does not turn out exactly to be at the conjunction, at the point when the moon is completely not visible, meaning that it's on exactly at the same place as the sun, and therefore you can't see it, and the Molad Levana is once it starts to move off of that point of being directly aligned with the sun, and that's why you can see the moon, if you have what's called a Nigud HaMiti. What happens if you have a real conjunction? And one of the proofs to the fact that you have a real conjunction is a solar eclipse. A solar eclipse tells you exactly when the moon is aligned with the sun. And that should be the Molad HaLevana, meaning that should be the exact moment of the conjunction, and then it should move off, which we just had. We just had a solar eclipse, and therefore you would know that the Molad was off by a little bit based on where the solar eclipse was. Our Molad was a little later than that. So he says, despite that fact, we rely on our Cheshbon, or the Cheshbon of the Chachamim, despite the fact that you're able to visibly see when the Molad is based on a solar eclipse, we still count based on our calculation of the Molad. So that's the first part about when do you say Kiddush Levana. The second thing is that the Kolbo brings, which is interesting, that he thinks that the position of the Rav Yehuda, who says that until the 7th of the month you say Kiddush Levana, and then our Dai would say until the 16th, is really Lachatchila and Bidiavad. The Chatchila, one should say Kiddush Levana within the first 7 days. Bidiavad, if you didn't do it in the first 7 days, then you could do it all the way until the 16th. So that would almost be the opposite of the way that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and the Sfaradim practice, which is they only wait till after 7 days in order to do the Kiddush Levana. Here, the Kolbo is suggesting that one should do it within the first 7 days, because that's really the Chiddush HaLevana. And Bidiavad, if it goes past that point, since you haven't reached the fullness of the moon, you can still continue to do it. There's also brought by the Or Zeruah the fact that in Masechet Sofrim it says that a person should do the Kiddush HaLevana at a time when it is Mivusam. It's not clear what the reference is to there. The way that our Girsa reads in the Masechet Sofrim, it seems to reference to the person, which is Vein Marachim Alireach Elo B'Motzei Shabbat. One should only do it on Motzei Shabbat, Kishu Mivusam U'Bekelim Naim, when he is adorned and full of Kelim Naim. So some read the Mivusam, meaning at the time that you do the Bracha, Borei Minei B'Samim, which means on Motzei Shabbat. Others say Mivusam, which is, means that he's adorned, and he's wearing nice clothing, which is the fact that since it's Kabbalat Pnei Hashchinah, it's appropriate that a person be dressed in their finest wear. If you're going to be Mekabel Pnei Hashchinah, that you should be in beautiful clothing. So therefore we do it on Motzei Shabbat, when people are already dressed for Shabbat. We do it then on Motzei Shabbat because then a person's already appropriately dressed and in the proper state of mind to be Mekabel Pnei Hashchinah. And that's why we try to do Kiddush Levana on Motzei Shabbat. There is a third possibility, which again has impact on Kiddush Levana, which is Kishehu Mivusam, references to the moon. That when the moon is Mivusam, or is something that is beneficial, or it's enjoyable, which is once the light of the moon has reached a certain amount of strength, that it becomes pretty nice or helpful to people the light of the moon. And so it's brought by the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yonah, brings that once you're 2 or 3 days into the month, then the light of the moon already is Mivusam, and therefore one should not make Kiddush Levana within the first 2 or 3 days of the month, and that's our practice, that we don't make Kiddush Levana until 72 hours after the Molad. So that means that the minimum amount you need to wait is 72 hours. You can only say Kiddush Levana after that time, because then the moon is Mivusam. It is something that you are Nehaneh, that you get benefit from, and therefore you can say Kiddush Levana starting at that point in time. Now, the practice to wait to Motzei Shabbat, over there the Trumat Deshen qualifies that statement and says it depends when in the month it is. The truth is, it really depends where you live. Meaning that in Eretz Yisrael, where you have, for instance, in the summertime, a very low likelihood that you're going to have clouds in the sky, then it's less worrisome to wait until Motzei Shabbat, because the likelihood you're going to have to miss Kiddush Levana because of clouds is very low. And even if you miss it on Motzei Shabbat, by waiting to Motzei Shabbat, you still have the days afterwards to make it up. In other places where cloud cover is very common and all the time, then one should take the opportunity to do it as soon as they can so they don't miss out on Kiddush Levana. And the Trumat Deshen brings a balance between those and says that if the Motzei Shabbat will be early on in the month, then one should wait till the Motzei Shabbat and do it then because of the fact that you'd be in a good state of mind and dress nicely for it. On the other hand, if the Motzei Shabbat that you're waiting for is going to be later in the month, like after the 10th, then one should be careful about waiting for that because it would only leave you a residual couple of days afterwards in which there's a possibility that you might miss Kiddush Levana altogether. So he says if there's a risk that you're going to miss Kiddush Levana, don't wait until Motzei Shabbat. If there is no risk to waiting, meaning that you're early enough in the month that the probabilities are that you will see the Kiddush Levana, even if it's not clear on Motzei Shabbat, you'll still have enough days afterwards where you could do Kiddush Levana, then it's worth waiting for Motzei Shabbat. But that does mean that if you do it during the weekday, then one should dress up or do something nice for Kiddush Levana because it is Kabbalat Pnei HaShchinah. Although Mishnah Berurah does note that this practice has fallen away, and people tend not to wear big day Shabbat when they do Kiddush Levana on a weekday. It also has impact on two minhagim that we have. One minhag is not to say Kiddush Levana prior to Tisha B'Av, and that is to wait until post Tisha B'Av when people are in a better state of mind, not in the 9 days, in order to do Kabbalat Pnei HaShchinah. So as the minhag and the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, not to do Kiddush Levana until Motzei Yom Kippurim, again, when the person is in that state of mind or that happy state of mind in which they can then do properly Kabbalat Pnei HaShchinah. So both of those are risky minhagim because you're waiting until the 10th of the month, leaves you a very short window in order to do Kiddush Levana if it's cloudy or it's stormy out. And therefore, the minhag in places where they don't have easy access to the moon or always the ability to see the moon is to say Kiddush Levana even prior to Tisha B'Av or even prior to Yom HaKippurim. The Gros is very against waiting until Motzei Shabbat. I think the Yekis have that minhag and not to wait till afterwards because of that risk. But in places where it's less risky, like in Eretz Yisrael, they definitely wait until afterwards. And I think the minhag and afutz, even in Chutz La'aretz, is to wait until after Tisha B'Av, until after Yom HaKippurim, in order to do Kiddush Levana. The other thing to address here is women and Kiddush Levana, which is that our Gemara seems to indicate that women do say Kiddush Levana. They had some abbreviated form of the bracha, it seems, but they would say Kiddush Levana. What is interesting is that the Shlah says that women do not say Kiddush Levana because they were goreim. They were the cause of the miut halevana. They were the cause of the fact that the moon was reduced. He brings that based on a Midrash Rabbah, which I've never been able to find the actual Midrash that he is quoting. The Midrash that we know is about the moon saying, how could you have two kings that rule at the same time or at the same size? And Hashem says, you're right, and therefore he reduces the moon down and keeps the sun at its full power. And that's the Midrash that explains why there was a reduction of the moon. But the Shlach quotes that the women were the cause of Miut HaLevana, and therefore it would be inappropriate for them to say Kiddush Levana. So that leads to the practice that women do not say Kiddush Levana. And that happens to be interesting based on our Gemara, because the simple reading of our Gemara is that you do make Kiddush Levana, or women do make Kiddush Levana. So you would have to reread the Gemara, and there are those that read it in the following manner, that the Gemara's statement, Amalei, Hainashe Didan, Nami Mivarche, is not a statement of fact, that our women would make such a bracha, or can make such a bracha, rather is a rhetorical question, which is, are women would make such a bracha? I mean, if it was so easy, they would have been making that bracha. But they don't make that bracha, so it means that that can't be the bracha. But not to indicate that the women breaking the bracha of Kiddush Levana, but simply to indicate that that's too simplistic a bracha for it to be the bracha of Kiddush Levana. But not to indicate through our Gemara that women actually are chayavot in Kiddush Levana. Again, which is very controversial based on the Pashtut Gemara. And therefore, there are those that have the practice. And I heard this from Rabbi David, that Rav Soloveitchik indicated this way, and that his wife and daughters also said Kiddush Levana, which is that the simple reading of the Gemara is that women are chayavot in Kiddush Levana. If they choose to say or they want to make the bracha of Kiddush Levana, that they have the right to do so, or that it's not a problem for them to do so. There is an additional machloket within the Achronim, like the Taz and the Magen Avraham, in discussing when women have the right to opt into mitzvot, which is that in general we have a belief that even when women are turot from a mitzvah, they still have the option to opt into the mitzvah, which is that, at least according to the Psak of the Ashkenazim that follow the Rabbeinu Tam, that if they're not chayavot in a mitzvah, they can opt into the mitzvah and make a brocha. Here, it seems that this is a mitzvah to say shazman grama, and therefore they should be turot from the mitzvah, although there is controversy about that as well, as to whether this is really a mitzvah shazman grama, because maybe it has nothing to do with the zman, but rather have to do with the state of the moon. It's not a time-bound mitzvah, it's a mitzvah that's tied to a particular event, and that's where the moon looks. And so some say it's not even a mitzvah to say shazman grama, but if you believe it is a mitzvah to say shazman grama, can women then opt into the mitzvah here? Where the mitzvah in its entirety is just a bracha, are women allowed to opt into such a mitzvah? When it's a maaseh that's the mitzvah, maybe they can opt in and make a bracha associated with the maaseh. But where the bracha itself is the mitzvah, do they have the right to opt in those situations and to be mechayavot themselves to say the bracha or to say this even though they are not necessarily chayavot in such a bracha? So that's a additional issue with regards to women saying Kiddush Levana, and the Shvut Yaakov in a tshuva with regards to Avelut says that might also be the reason that the women are not saying Kiddush Levana is because they tend to tear or cry easily and they're saddened more often, and therefore they wouldn't be in the right state of mind to do Kiddush Levana. It's a very interesting reason that he gives. There's no real source for that, but he speculates that maybe that's the reason. But again, from the Pashtut Gemara here, it would seem that women can make Kiddush Levana, which is echoed by the Maharam Mirutenberg, who brings the famous Midrash and would go against this shlah and the trend to say that women are not chayavot in Kiddush Levana. That the women are given Rosh Chodesh because they didn't worship the Egel, and therefore they have a minhag not to do work on Rosh Chodesh, and Rosh Chodesh is indicative of the Geula L'atid Lavo, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the future with Michadshan Kein Rosh Chodesh. And that would be a much more positive association of the women with Rosh Chodesh, despite the common practice that women do not say the bracha of Kiddush Levana. Now the Gemara continues with discussing the Mishnah, where it says that there's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda as to how many hours a person will make a mistake or have a deviation away from the norm. Over there we said, Echad Omer b'shtei sha'ot, up to 2 hours there is such a deviation. That's the opinion of Rabbi Huda. Amar Rav Shimi ba'ashi lo shanu elu sha'ot. That's only true about hours. Echad Omer kodem neitzachama, v'chad Omer lachar neitzachama. One of them says it happened before sunrise, the other one said it happened after sunrise, edutan b'teila, then that is a contradiction, because it's so obvious, it's such a clear demarcation, sunrise, that nobody makes a mistake between before sunrise and after sunrise. And when it says pshita, that's so straightforward and so simple, you wouldn't have to tell me that, because of course, people don't make mistakes before sunrise and after sunrise. Ela echad omer kodem neitzachama, v'echad omer b'tocha neitz. One of them says it happened prior to sunrise, and the other one says it happened during sunrise. So over there, we still say that it is considered to be a contradiction. Hanami pshita, the Gemara says again, that's pretty straightforward. The Gemara says that's not as straightforward. Maybe the person was just seeing the glow of the light that was coming up, then it is just the rays that he's seeing, but not the sun itself. And therefore he mistakes the sighting as being a sunrise, which actually happens in the Mishnah Yoma with regards to the start of the Avodah and the Mikdash. And therefore the Mishnah there tells us that they improved the way that they used to check for the fact that it was already Alot HaShachar based on the fact that they did one time have a mistake that was made that somebody thought it was the morning because of the light or whatever they had seen over there. And similarly over here, maybe you could suggest that there is no contradiction between the two positions, which is that even the one who said that it would happen at sunrise, it really was prior to sunrise, but he thought that the light or the glow of the sky was sunrise. Kamash Malan, that we don't accept that, that since it is such a clearly demarcated moment, that we consider any deviation from that to be considered a contradiction and not something that people make mistakes about. Bachagach Machnisim. So there it says that if this individual, one of the students, comes up with a zchut for the defendant, then we elevate him to the bench for that day. And the Gemara says, Oto ayom betulo, only that day he's elevated and no longer. Vatanya, im yesh mamash bidvarav, if the student comes up with something of substance, lo haya reid misham leolam, he remains on the bench forever, meaning that we don't take him down at all. Bimein mamash bidvarav, but if there's no substance to what he says, ein yareid kol ayom kulo, kadesh lo te aliyato yirida lo, then they don't demote him or put him back to his seat for that entire day in order that his aliyah should not be an embarrassment or a yiridah for him. Because if they bring him up and then they find that his position or what he's adding is not of substance, if they immediately tell him to go back to his seat, that would be embarrassing. If they leave him up there for the day, at least that gives him a sense of kavod. And when he returns to his seat, it'll be just like the normal process where he enters into the chambers on a regular day. But it won't be as if he has to go and sit down in front of everybody. And therefore, we leave him up there for the entire day. Amrabai tagamua imein mamash bidvarav. So we have to explain our Mishnah as a case where there is no substance to what he's saying, then he only remains for the day. But if there is substance to what he says, then he permanently is elevated to the bench. Matzolo zchut, myayin maitaimalo. Why is it that the judges are not allowed to drink wine when they are deliberating? Amrabi acha barchanin amakra, the pasuk says, that the princes should not be involved with intoxicating drink. Now, the psukim there in the final parak in Mishlei, which is the introductory part before Eshet Chayil, the context that it's written in is about adjudication, so it makes sense that it's discussing that, which the Gemara interprets as oskim berezo shel olam, those that are dealing with the secrets of the world, things that are of a severe nature, al shishtachru, should not become intoxicated. The Balia Tosafot note over here that they think that the Raz, the secret that we're speaking about, is only applicable to Dine Nefeshot and not to Dine Mimonot. And then he says, what do we do with the Gemara that says, Shata Revit Yayin Al Yoreh, that one may not paskin when it comes to having a Revit Yayin? Hainu Hura'ah. That's only when you're giving Psak of Easter and Heter. But when it comes to Dine Mimonot, there is no restriction. The Bach, on the other hand, takes major issue with this Balia Tosafot and says that this has equal application to Dine Nefeshot and Dine Mimonot. And anybody who is drinking wine is not allowed to give a verdict, whether it's in a capital case or whether it is in a monetary matter. Lo ra'u mai. If they are unable to come to a conclusion here, which gives them either a majority of one to acquit or a majority of two to make him guilty, what do we do? Then we release the defendant because we basically have a hung bait in and therefore we can't come to a decision and the person, the default situation is that he is acquitted. We release him. Why bother then with adding on to the bait in all the way through, first of all? And second of all, even if you reach to the number of 71 after adding on, why do we bother to have them try to convince each other to move their positions? As soon as we reach this position where we have a hung beit din, we should just release him right away. That they shouldn't go out of beit din mixed up. And the way Rashi says it is, g'nai the beit din sheyetzu b'machloket. It is a negative reflection on the beit din that they're coming out with this split decision. And they can't reach a conclusion. So for that reason, we don't. We try our best for them to come to a conclusion, rather than have it be a hunk baitin. Ikadamre, some suggest this. Why do you have to add on judges? First baitin, as soon as they can't reach a conclusion, let's just release him. You have a Tana that really believes like what you're saying, Rabbi Yossi. The Tana, Rabbi Yossi, Shem Shem Ovisivim, Al Baitin Shel Shivim Ve'Echad. Just like you don't add on to a baitin of 71, Kachin Mosivim Al Baitin Shel Esrim Ve'Shlosha. So too you don't add on to a baitin of 23. And therefore, if the beit din is in a situation where it's hung, we acquit him right away and we don't add on judges. And so therefore, the default situation is that we will acquit the individual when the beit din is hung. In a Beit Din of 23, we have two possible ways to deal with that. One is to acquit him. That's what Rabbi Yossi says, is that since they can't come to a conclusion, we release him. The other view of the Chachamim is that we add on judges until we reach 71. At the point of 71, if they're still hung, we technically should release him. But because of Rabbi Yochanan's suggestion here that would reflect negatively on the Beit Din, if we did that, we ask them to deliberate further to see if they can change that position. But if not, the person is acquitted. Tanan Banan, Omer Bedine Mimanot Nizdakena Din, Vein Omer Bedine Nefashot Nizdakena Din. We do say this concept of Nizdakena Din, that the Din has aged, we'll call it, but we do say that by Din Mimanot, we don't say it by Din Nefashot. My Nizdakena Din, what exactly is meant by this of the aging of the Din? Ilei Makash Dina, if you say that the Din is very difficult, meaning that the situation, the circumstance, the decision is very complex, so complex that maybe it's beyond our ability to decide about it. Rashi says that the Beit Din Tzarech L'Hamtim Bo needs more time to figure it out or to work out the issues. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot say that they are unable completely to come to any conclusion in this case. Then Ipcha Mibayile, then the conclusion should have been just the opposite, meaning that it would be more appropriate to say such a thing by Din Nefashot and not by Dine Mimonot, because there's a requirement by Dine Feshot of Itzilu Eida to protect the defendant. And therefore, if that was the truth about this situation, we'd more likely or more apt to say it by Dine Feshot than Dine Mimonot. So Amar Rav Huna Bar Manoach, Mishim Deravacha, Brei Deravika, Epoch, flip it, Enoch Anami, Nizdakena Din means it's something that's beyond our ability to deal with, and we would only say it by Dine Feshot, not by Dine Mimonot. Rav Ashi Amar Lolom Lot Epoch, don't flip it around and remain that this is said by Dine Mimonot and not by Dine Fashot, to my Nizdakena Din. So then what's the meaning of Nizdakena Din? Chacham Dina. That the Din we have looked into fully and completely, and we believe that our conclusion is right. Meaning that they will not take additional evidence or reopen the case to look at it again upon appeal, because they believe that they've looked at it so carefully and the conclusion is so certain that then will not reopen the verdict. Meitaveg, Gadol Shvedayanim Omer Nistakein Adin. So we say that the head of the Beit Din is allowed to say Nistakein Adin. Imart Bishlama Chacham Dina. If you say, like Rav Ashi, that the meaning here is Chacham Dina, Einu Damar Gadol. Then it makes sense that the leader of the Beit Din, the head of the Beit Din, is the one who makes such a declaration that we won't reopen the case, and that we feel we've come to a conclusion that is clear and final. Elo Iamart Kashdina, if you say that the Din is so difficult or so hard, Lo Sagid Lo Amar Gadol, it's not enough that the head of the Beit Din says this, Ksufeyu Deka Mifsik Nafshei. He's embarrassing himself when he makes such a statement. Where it says in, Enu Demo Mitpayesh Mi'atzmo, Mitpayesh Mi'achirim. It's actually more appropriate for him to say it than anybody else to say it, because it does reflect poorly on the Beit Din that they're unable to adjudicate the case or deal with the case because of its complexity. But it's better if the head of the Beit Din says it, because when someone says something about themselves, it's less embarrassing than when another party says it about them. If a lower person, the Beit Din, said it, it would reflect negatively on the Beit Din and would be embarrassing towards the leader of the Beit Din. If the leader of the Beit Din himself says it, even though it has the same effect, but it's less embarrassing when he says it himself than when others say it about him. Igadamre, some suggest this. Iamar Bishlama Kashdina, if you say that the meaning of Nizdakena Din is that it is a very difficult, complex situation, Hainu Deinu Domeh, Mitbayesh Me'atzmah, Mitbayesh Me'acherim. That explains why the Gadol B'Beit Din has to say it, because it's less embarrassing when he says it than others say it. Iamar Chacham Dina, Gadol Hashbuchei Mashbach Nafshei. The head of the Beit Din is giving himself accolades, patting himself on the back, is praising himself. Do we do such a thing? Aktiv Yalelcha Zar Velo Picha. Don't we have a general principle that you should receive praise from others and not from yourself? Meaning that it's inappropriate to be self-promotional. So Shiny Milta de Beit Dina. No, when it comes to a Beit Din, it's different. That Gadol Ramya. That all protocol and all things that deal with the Beit Din really fall on the shoulders of the leader of the Beit Din. Kedetnan. Like we saw in our Mishnah, Gamru et ha-davari mechnisim otan, when they come to a conclusion in their deliberations, then they bring in the individual, Gadol shebedayanim omer, and then the head of the Beit Din speaks to him and says, Ish poni ata zakai, ish poni ata chayav, and they give him the verdict as to whether he's acquitted or guilty. So we see that the head of the Beit Din is the one who speaks in all situations, and so too over here. Even though in some ways it's self-praise or self-aggrandizement, still, because he's the head of the Beit Din, he's the one who has to speak, and it's only appropriate that he speaks, even though in general we would not look for people to self-promote in these types of situations. Here's the exception, because the head of the Beit Din is the only one who really can speak on behalf of the Beit Din. With that, we complete the fifth parak, Hadron Alach, Hayu Bodkim. Right now we begin the sixth parak, and it's really just a continuation of the previous parak, which is Nigmar Adin. If the Din is completed, and the verdict is guilty, and now we're going to the carrying out, the execution of the punishment that is associated with that verdict of guilty. Here the Mishnah is going to take up a case of skila, of stoning, because that is the most severe of capital punishments that can be given by the Beit Din. And so the Mishnah uses that as the paradigm for explaining, and then we'll move into the other items. So Nigmar Adin, Motzino told the Soklo, they take him out to stone him. Beit HaSkila Yachutz LeBeit Din. The Beit HaSkila, the place where they did the executions, has to be away from where the Beit Din is. Shenemar Hotzei Et HaMekalel. Because in the instructions with regards to the Mekalel in Chumash, over there it says you have to take him out. So after he's found guilty in Beit Din, they take him out to the area of execution. Echad Omeid Al HaPetach Beit Din VeSudarin BiYado. Someone stands at the entrance to the Beit Din and he has a flag or a handkerchief in his hand, v'sus rachok mimenu, and then there is a horse, somebody riding a horse that is far away from him, kedei sheiroeu, in a place where you can still see the person standing at the entrance to Beit Din. Omer echad yesh li lamed alav zchut, if somebody in the Beit Din says, I have something to his defense, halaminif besudarin, the one at the entrance to Beit Din waves his flag, v'sus rats umamidan. And then the person who's on horseback sees the waving flag and he rides to catch up with the procession that's taking him out to the sentence, to the execution, and he stops them. Vafilu hu omer. And even if the guilty party, the defendant over here says, Yesh li lamed al atzmi zechut, he says, I have something to say about myself in my defense. Machzirin oto, we return him. Afilu arba v'chamesh pe'amim. Even 4 or 5 times. Bubad yesh mamash bidvarav. As long as there's some substance, what he's saying. We don't just do it willy-nilly, there has to be substance. And the Gemara will have to explain now, how do we know whether there's substance or not, whether we should bring him back or not bring him back. Now the Gemara says, Ubeit HaSkila chutz de Beit Din avo? Was the Beit Din, is Beit HaSkila really chutz de Beit Din, but too low and no more? It makes it sound like it's just got to be some sort of separation between them. Not anymore. V'atanya, don't we have a brayta? Beit HaSkila yachutz l'shlosh machanot. That the Beit HaSkila has to be outside of the shlosh machanot. Now this, as Rashi and the Balei Tosfot point out, is only relevant inside of Yerushalayim, in which there are 3 gradations in Yerushalayim. There's Machaneh Shechina, which is the equivalent of the Beit HaMikdash. There's Machaneh Leviyah, which is Har HaBayit. And then there's Machaneh Yisrael, which is the city itself. So Chutz Mishlosh Machanot means that the Beit HaSkila was outside the city entirely. And that's true in any other city in Israel, that the Chutz Mishlosh Machanot would be the equivalent to it being outside of the city. So the Braita seems to indicate it's not just that there's a distance between where the Beit Din is and the place of execution, but rather that it has to be completely outside of the city. And if that's the case, why does our Mishnah just simply say it has to be outside of Beit Din? So Gemara says, in Kida Amart, you are right, the Braita is telling us what the true position is. Barak Tani Hochi, the reason that our Mishnah writes it in the manner that it did was, Nafkamina di Nafik Beidina v'yotiv chutz l'shosh machanot, is because our Mishnah is addressing a case where the Beit Din possibly sat outside the city, that its position was not on Har HaBayit, or in the Machaneh Leviyah, or in the Machaneh Yisrael, but rather outside the city. Even when it's out the side of the city, Avdin and Beit HaSkila chutz the Beit Din, you still have to distance between the Beit Din and the place of execution. Ke'eche delo mitchazei Beit Din rotzchim, so that the Beit Din doesn't look like a killer Beit Din. Any Beit Din that has a place of execution immediately next to it makes it look like that the point of the Beit Din is to bring people to that execution. And it reflects negatively on the Beit Din, who is supposed to be a defender of the rights of individuals. Inami, keichi davilei hatzala. Or the other reason is that we give it time between the decision or the verdict of guilty and the taking of the individual out to be executed. We have some delay, in the process of moving them from the Beit Din to the point of execution, so that if somebody comes up with something to save him, they will have enough time to do so. How do we know that which the Braita says at Esvi Chutz Shlosh Machanot, how do we know that is true? The Tan Rabbanan, Hotzeyata Mikalel Michutz the Machaneh, Michutz the Gimel Machanot, that's the outside of the three Machanot. Ataomer Chutz the Gimel Machanot, Oeno Ela Chutz the Machaneh Achat. How do you know it has to be outside of all three Machanot? Maybe it only has to be outside of one Machaneh, meaning you have to be one stage removed from wherever the Beit Din is sitting. Nemerkan Michutz the Machaneh. Over here by the Beit Din, it says Michutz the Machaneh, which is the requirement to see at the Mikalel, that you have to take the Mikalel, Michutz the Machaneh. V'nemar b'parim v'nisrafim. It also says by the parim v'nisrafim, Michutz the Machaneh. Parim v'nisrafim, which are mentioned in Ezum Mikomam, refer to two parim, is the par helam davar shel tzibur and the par shel koin Mashiach. Those are two parshiot that are juxtaposed to each other, which is found in Parsha Vayikra and Perek Dalid. The first one is im koin Mashiach echta lashmat ha'am. That refers to the par of the koin Mashiach. And then afterwards, we have another parshia that says, V'im kol adat yishol yishkuven elam davar minei ha'kahal, which is referring to the par elam davar shel tzibur. At the end of the parshia, par elam davar shel tzibur, it says, V'asala par, kashe asala par ha'chatat. You would treat the par of the elam davar the same way you treated the par of the koin Mashiach. Ken yaselo b'chiper elam ha'koim in yislach lahem. Then afterwards, right afterwards, it says, V'otzi et ha'par o michutz tamachaneh. B'saraf oto kashe saraf et ha'par rishon chatat ha'kal hu. Right afterwards, after that pasuk that connects the two of them, it says, you'll take it michutz l'machaneh. Well, we've already told us that the par helam davar shel tzibur is identical to the par koin Mashiach, and by the par koin Mashiach, it says, v'otzi et kol ha'par michutz l'machaneh, makom tor, shefach hadeshen, saraf oto etzim ba'esh, shefach hadeshen yisareif, then why do I need again to be repeated by the par helam davar shel tzibur, v'otzi et ha'par michutz l'machaneh? So that is a duplication of michutz l'machaneh. In addition, in the case of the Mikalel, it says, "Hotzei et haMikalel miChutz laMachaneh, v'samelchu kol haShemim mitadeim haRosho v'ragemu oto kol haYida." So, for that reason, the Gemara says, "Mala halan chutz l'shlosh machanot." Just like by the Parim and Nisrafim, it's outside of the three machanot. Avkan chutz l'shlosh machanot. So too over here, by the Mikalel, it's outside the three machanot. V'hatamid halan. How do you know by the Parim Nisrafim it's outside of the three machanot? The Tanur Rabbanan, we have a braita, utziat et kol ha'par el michutz l'machaneh, chutz l'shlosh machanot. Ata omer chutz l'shlosh machanot en ela chutz l'machaneh achat. So you're saying that it should be outside of the three machanot? And the braita says, how do you know it's the three machanot and not mod machaneh? Kshu omer el michutz l'machaneh b'paraida. When it says el michutz l'machaneh b'parim elam davar shibor, she'ain tal madomer, it was not necessary as we noted before. Because it says, v'saraf oto kasharei saraf et ha'par rishon. It already tells you that the par helam davar shel tzibur should be identical to the par koin Mashiach. And there it already says, michutz l'machaneh. Liten lo machaneh shnia. To tell you that not only does it have one machaneh, but it goes out of two machanot. Shu omer. And when it says in the Vayikra Vav, the Parshat Adeshin that we read each morning, v'shadat e'bigadav levash bigadim acharim mutziyat adeshel michutz l'machaneh ha'makom tahor, the requirement to remove the ashes from on the Mizbeach and take it outside of the Machaneh, Shein Talmud Omar, over there again, you don't need that information, Sharei Kvar Ne'amar, because it already said, and we read the Pasuk by the Par Koin Mashiach, that is taken in Nisraf, Al Shefech HaDeshen Yisareif, that it says that you burn the Par where the Deshen is poured out. So that again means it's the same place. And why do you need, they tell me then that the Shefech HaDeshen is Michutz LaMachaneh? They tain lo Machaneh Shlishit, to tell you that there's a third Machaneh. So each of these Michutz LaMachaneh tells you that I have to move an additional Machaneh out. Again, the first one by the Kohen Mashiach is necessary to tell you have to go out of one Machaneh. But the one by the Parim Davar Shel Tzibur, which already was compared to the Par Kohen Mashiach, is unnecessary. And the one by the Deshen is also unnecessary because by Par Kohen Mashiach, it tells you you burn it where the Shefech HaDeshen is. So those two additional Michutz LaMachaneh teach us that each one of them adds on an additional Michutz LaMachaneh and tells you the definition of Michutz LaMachaneh means outside of all three Machanot. That means outside of the Machaneh Shechinah, outside the Mikdash, Michutz LaMachaneh Leviyah, outside of Har HaBayit, and Michutz LaMachaneh Yisrael, which is outside the Ir Yerushalayim. And that is that the Parim and Yisrafim and the Deshen were taken outside of Yerushalayim completely. And just like over there, it's Michutz L'Shlosh Machanot, so too, the definition, Michutz LaMachaneh, by the Mikalel, will be outside of the three Machanot. And that's how the Braita comes to the conclusion that the execution is done outside of the three machanot. Gemara says, V'leilef mishkutei chutz. Why are you learning from the case of michutz l'machane over here? Why don't you learn it out from mishkutei chutz, which if you bring a korban that is outside of the mikdash, then you are culpable for shkutei chutz, for doing or bringing kodashim outside of the mikdash, being makriv them michutz l'mikdash. The mikdash is machane shchina, and you're chayav as long as you're outside of the machane achat, outside the machane shchina. Which is ish ish mi beit yisrael she yishchat shor kesef o eiz v'machane, o ashe yishchat michutz l'machane. And mala ala an chutz l'machane achat. And there the michutz l'machane is defined by the next pasuk, which is ve'el betachol moed lo yivyo l'akrib kurban l'ashem lifnei mishkan Hashem. And the person didn't bring it to the mikdash, but rather did it michutz l'machane. And outside of the machane means outside the machane shechina. So why not then have the shkutei chutz be the paradigm, and then the mikalel, who's michutz l'machane, also be outside the machane shechina, not outside the shlosh machanot. Says mistavra miparim nisrafim habile the melef. Makes more sense to compare the michutz l'machane of the mikalel to the michutz l'machane of the parim and nisrafim shekain, because they have these things in common, these four things in common. Hotzei, o michutz l'machane, machshir u'michaper. As Rashi explains each one of them, the hotzei, by the mikalel and the parim, it says the word hotza'a, to take it actively outside, versus the shkutei chutz, which is that it is done outside, it's not taken outside. So the verb, or the active verb hotzei, is shared by those two. And in addition, it says, el michutz l'machane. In both of the cases, the parim nisrafim, and by the case of the mikalel, it's el michutz l'machane, rather than by the case of shkutei chutz, which is, it is michutz l'machane. An additional commonality between them is it's a machshir. In both the case of the parim nisrafim and the mikalel, there is a process or a mitzvah in order to do this. This is the proper way to carry out the item. Parim Nisrafim are supposed to be taken Michutz L'machaneh, and the Mikalel is also supposed to be executed Michutz L'machaneh. Then in Shkutei Chutz, the Michutz L'machaneh is someone who's doing the wrong thing. They're not accomplishing a mitzvah. They're doing an Aveira when they are Michutz L'machaneh. Whereas the Rabbeinu Hananel here brings two alternate explanations of the word Machshir, one of which is that the Par Kohen Mashiach is Machshir, the Kohen Gadol, to begin or to do Avoda again. And similarly, the killing of the individual brings him about kapara u'machshiro. That's the way he says it. Or he says that the word machshiro is connected to v'samchu, that the placement of the hands. And here it says v'samchu ziknei ha'ida, that there is smicha on the animal, as well as by the case of the mikalel, that the edim are samchu yidehem, and that the hechsher is connected to the samchu, and that's the common denominator between them, that's not by shkutei chutz. So that's another commonality between them. They are machshir. And the last common denominator between them is that they are a mechaper. They both are coming to bring atonement to the individual. Korbanot, obviously. And by the case of the death of the individual, the punishment is acting as an atonement for the sin that they committed. Whereas by shkutei chutz, it is the sin to be michutz l'machane. So since you have those four commonalities between them, that's a reason to believe that you would compare the hotza'ah of the mikalel to the hotza'ah of the parim and nisrafim. The Gemara retorts and says, Adrabah, just the opposite, mishkutei chutz av le melef, you should learn from shkutei chutz, shekein, because we have four commonalities between shkutei chutz and the mikalel. Shekein, Adam, both of them deal with individuals, meaning that by the case of shkutei chutz, the person is shechting mechutz l'machaneh. They are the ones committing the sin. And even though, as Tosfot points out, the pashtut is that that's the pasuk speaking at the individual, nevertheless, halachically, if one stands inside the mikdash and shechs something outside the mikdash, he will be culpable because the shechita is done b'chutz, and vice versa, if he's standing outside and he shechs something inside, then it is not a problem of shkutei chutz. So despite that little nuance, it still focuses on where the person is placed, and not necessarily the animal, even though in the practicality, where the animal is shechted is what matters. But the person who is doing the shechita is where the focus is, and that's why it connects it to Adam and not to the object, the animal itself. By the case of the mikalel, we're taking the person who's being executed outside the machaneh, versus the parim and nisrafim, which are referring to the animals. It's not about the person taking them out, it's that they, animals, have to be taken michutz l'machaneh. Number two is choteh, that obviously the mikalel is someone who has sinned and done something wrong, and so too, the shkutei chutz is someone who has done something wrong, And that's a common denominator between them. Parim and Sofrim, nobody did anything wrong. They're actually trying to bring the korban or finish off the korban that was done. Nishama, by the case of both the Shkutei Chutz and the execution, there's a taking of a life. That is, by the Shkutei Chutz, you're shechting an animal. And by the case of the Mikalel, you are executing someone, Michutz Machaneh. Which is not true by the Parim and Nisrafim, who are already shechted and dead. You're just taking the carcasses outside to be burnt. Rashi brings an alternative view, which is that the Netilat Nishama is the punishment associated with both of them, meaning that execution is obviously an execution of someone who did something wrong and requires Netilat Nishama. And so too, the person who shechs Mishchutei Chutz, the punishment is a loss of life, which is karet, as opposed to the Parim Nisrafim, which is their completion of the process of bringing korbanot. And the last thing is pigul, which is that both by the execution outside the machaneh and the shkutei chutz, machshava, the thought of doing it outside the machaneh, has no impact, as opposed to the parim and nisrafim, that if one has in mind to do something michutz the machaneh, then that would cause a problem of pigul. That is the word pigul in the Torah. Pigul in the Mishnah and in the Gemara refers to chutz lizmano, a thought of doing something outside of the time bounds which are normally allowed for a korban. Chutz l'mekomo is called chutz l'mekomo, not pigol. But in the Torah terms chutz l'mekomo as pigol, and that's what the Gemara is referencing over here, that by parim nisrafim, if one shechs them with the intent of doing them chutz l'mekomo, bringing those korbanot outside of the place where they're supposed to be brought, that would be posel the korban. On the other hand, there is no concept of machshava by the mikalel, or the punishment or execution of the individual, as well as by shchutei chutz. It all has to do with about the placement of where it happens, nothing to do with the machshava about what will happen. So now you have a balance of four and four. Four reasons to compare it to Parim Nisrafim. Four reasons to compare it to Shkutei Chutz. So still, why would you compare it to the Parim Nisrafim, Chutz L'Shlosh Machanot, and not to Shkutei Chutz, which is Chutz L'Machaneh Achat? My answer is Machshir Mi Machshir Adiflei. The comparison, the commonality that they both are, the accomplishment of a mitzvah, trumps all the other reasons. That's a reason to put them together. Just like the execution is the proper way to do it, so too, by the Parim Nisrafim, it's the proper way to do it, is to take the Mechutz L'Machaneh, as opposed to Shkutei Chutz, which is the improper way to do it. And comparing the Machshir to Machshir makes it more sense to say that these two have the commonality of Mechutz L'Machaneh, rather than comparing it to the Mechutz L'Machaneh of the Shkutei Chutz. And for that reason, we believe that the place of execution must be Mechutz L'Shlosh Machanot, or in essence has to be outside of all three machanot, outside the city, in a city that is not Yerushalayim. We're going to stop here, six lines from the bottom of Membet, Amud Bet.